I'm now on page 150 in option A, and I'm now going to talk about the perception of stimuli. So I'm going to talk specifically about the eyes and the ears. Page 150, perception of stimuli. So first of all, you have to understand that there are different types of stimuli in the environment, and we have to deal with them, and there are different receptors, these are nerve cells, that pick them up. And we have four of them, so-called mechanoreceptors. They are able to pick up mechanical energy. And an example of this would be the cells in the ear, the hair cells in the ear, and basically because they vibrate, okay? And the vibration, that's a mechanical thing. Also the pressure receptors in the skin, that's also, these are also mechanoreceptors because they are able to detect mechanical energy, pressure, for example. Chemoreceptors are able to detect chemicals. So where can you find them? Well, you can find them on the tongue and in the nose, okay? Also, for example, the tongue is able to detect chemicals from water, dissolved chemicals, and the nose, volatile chemicals, which are in gas form. Thermoreceptors are able to detect temperature, and there are certain receptors in the skin that do that. So the skin is able to sense temperature, of course. Photoreceptors are able to detect light, and they can be found in the eyes. These are so-called the rod and the cone cells in the eyes. These are receptors, okay? So that is kind of the overview over the so-called the sensory receptors. And what they do is that you see that the different receptors are specialized for different types of stimuli. Now, let's talk about the eye, okay? The photoreceptors are found in the eye, and there are two different types of photoreceptors in your eye. The cones and the rods. Okay, and important is to understand now is that the cones or the cone cells, they are able to detect color. Easy to remember, cone cells for color, and the rod cells, they are able to detect they're not able to detect color, so they just see basically all only black white, but they have the advantage that the rod cells have the advantage that they are also able to work at very dim light. Okay, so the cone cells have the advantage that they have, they're able to see color, have the disadvantage that they need a lot of light, they don't work in dim light, and the rod cells have the disadvantage that they cannot see color, but they have the advantage that they can also work in dim light. What you see over here on page 150 in the diagram, you see a couple of dotted lines. Okay, and these dotted lines with the peaks of at 420 nanometers, 534 and 564 nanometers, they are basically the absorption of the different for the different cone cells. Okay, so for example, the one at 420 nanometers likes to absorb very well in blue light. The one at 534 very much in green light, and the one at 564 more at the yellow red light. Okay, so red, green, blue. That these are the three colors that the cone cells are able to absorb. And if you look, for example, at the rod cell, it's the black solid line, and that one kind of stretches across from the blue-green into the red, okay? So the rod cells, they are sensitive to all colors. They pick up all colors, okay? And because they pick up all colors, they, at the same time, they cannot distinguish between them. Okay, that is important to understand, okay? Many people are confused here. If they think, the rod cell is sensitive to all colors, then they can distinguish the colors. No, then they respond to all colors equally, and if they do that, you cannot distinguish between them, right? So that is the thing here, okay? So that is, these are the different types of receptors that you find in the eye, and there are so-called pigments, and these pigments in the receptors are called the opsins, and that's the next box, red-green color blindness. And these opsins, these are proteins, and these proteins, they are coded for on the DNA, of course, on the X chromosome, okay? And this is the reason why if there is a problem in the DNA on the X chromosome of these opsins, then the people have a problem seeing color. And this is the reason why color blindness is a sex-linked condition and why men are more often colorblind than women, okay? Because if they have a man has a recessive allele, damaged opsin DNA on the X chromosome, the recessive allele, then the person might have will have a problem seeing. Okay, so the red green color blindness is a sex linked condition, and this is basically the reason why men are more often colorblind than women are. So that's I just have to briefly jump into the nose over here, olfactory receptors, and then I have to go back to the eye. Olfactory receptors over here on the left side. These are receptors that are found in the nose, okay, and they are important for detecting substances that are in air, gas form, volatile. It means, okay, and these receptor cells are found in the nose, and there are many different receptor cells in the nose which are able to pick up different types of substances. Okay, so that is, and different genes on the DNA encode for the different receptors, on the nerve cells that they're able to pick up, okay? So that is, humans don't have a lot of these, okay? That is the thing, humans, we don't have a lot of these olfactory receptors. Dogs have a lot of them, right? That's why dogs are able to pick up smells that we're not even aware of that they exist. Okay, so that is the thing. We humans are pretty good in vision and so on, but not very good in smelling things. Page 151, next page, vision in humans. And what I'm going to do now is the following. I'm going to first go all the way down to the structure of the human eye and explain the overall structure of the human eye. And then I'm going to go up to the top of the page, because the drawing in the top of the page actually is an enlargement of one of the part of the eyes down here. Okay, very briefly, page 151 at the bottom cross-section of the eye. I'm just going to tell you what the different parts do. The lens is important for focusing. So the lens changes its thickness, and it's thicker when you look at objects that are close by, and it's thinner if you're looking at objects that are further away. So the lens is for focusing. The aqueous humor, which is the front part, front chamber of the eye, together with the lens, are working. The aqueous humor works like a lens, so to say. Okay, it is not called lens, but it is because it's curved. It works like a lens, and the aqueous humor, together with the lens, they project an image on the retina. Okay, on the retina, that's on the other side over here, all the way on the right side. So it's like an overhead projector projecting an image, okay, on the screen. The pupil, that is the opening, it's a space between the eye, made by the iris. And the pupil allows the light to go through and is able to control the amount of light that goes into the eye. However, the iris is actually the object that blocks the light. So the pupil is only the hole in it. But the iris, that is the part, that's the thing of the eye that gives a person the eye color. So if you look into somebody else's eye, you're going to see that the center is always black. There's this black, very black circle. That's the pupil. But the surrounding, that is the iris, and that gives the so-called the eye color. The conjunctiva, that is the most outermost layer of the cornea. And the cornea and the conjunctiva, that's the very most outer layer of cells. Okay, that's where the contact lens is put on. Okay. And the cornea, surrounds the so-called aqueous humor. And the vitreous humor, that is the jelly-like substance that fills the contents of the eye. Okay, you have the eye itself has three layers, the sclera, the choroid, and the retina. The sclera is a tough outermost layer that holds the eye together. The eye is under pressure. Okay, the choroid is a very dark black pigmented layer of cells that makes the inside of the eye black, almost like a cinema, which is black on the inside. Very important for reducing internal reflections, because if you don't make it dark, then you're also not able to see the image of a video projector or of an overhead projector. And the retina is the part of the eye that contains the photoreceptors. I'm going to talk more about that. That's the picture at the top. The fovea is the part of the retina which is the place of the sharpest vision. So in the fovea you have a lot of nerve cells. And this is the place where it's sharpest. When you're reading a book, you're going to see that the place that you're looking at, the word that you're looking at, is the sharpest, and the words around it, they are not sharp. Okay, you still see that there is something around it, but you're not able to see it clearly. Okay, just look at one word in the book, and you're able to read it, but the stuff that you see around it is not clear. Okay, that's because the clear part is in the fovea. The optic nerve, that is the nerve that goes to the brain. And the blind spot, that is the place where the optic nerve leaves and you do not have, you don't have nerve cells there, okay? So this means you don't see anything there, and you're not aware of that there's a part where you don't see. You're not aware of that because the brain fills this in, okay? That's the reason. Okay, so that is basically the overall structure of the human eye and some of the functions. And now we go all the way to the top, okay, to the drawing on the top. We go to the very left. It says here, layer of pigmented cells. That is the choroid. That's the layer I just talked about, the black layer of pigmented cells. And the retina itself, the light-sensitive part that picks up the light, this the screen, so to say, is again made up of three layers, okay? The retina itself is made of three layers. The so-called the photoreceptor layer, not properly labeled in the book over here, is made of the cone cells and the rod cells. And you see that these appear pretty long, okay? The rod and so that's the photoreceptor layer. Then in the middle you have a so-called a bipolar layer. It's labeled with bipolar neuron. And then the third layer on the right is called the ganglion layer. And these are nerve cells that collect and send the signal to the optic nerve and to the brain. So the retina again has three layers. The question is now, why and how? And where does the light come from? The light comes over here in the drawing from the right side. It has to go first through the ganglion layer. Then the light has to go to the bipolar layer. And then it reaches the nerve cells, the photoreceptor layer. Then the photoreceptors are stimulated and then they send a nerve signal back to the bipolar layer, to the ganglion layer, and then it goes over the optic nerve to the brain. Okay? So, over here you see the cone cells and you see that there is one cone cell connected to one bipolar cell. Okay? That is important. You see that three rod cells or several rod cells are connected to one bipolar cells. Okay, so that is an important distinction here between rod and cone cells. For every cone cell, there is a separate nerve going basically to the brain, while in the rod cells, they're kind of bundled together. Multiple rod cells are responsible for one nerve signal. Okay. And then the nerve fibers are collected of the ganglion cells and then it goes to the optic nerve. Okay? And at the very part where it says direction of light, it's part of the vitreous humor. So the light comes, in this case, in this drawing here, from the right side. So that's basically one thing. We now move on, assessing brain damage using the pupil reflex. The pupil reflex is the following. When there is a lot of light, then the muscles in the iris make the pupil smaller to allow less light in. And this is a reflex which is controlled by the midbrain. Okay, and in the midbrain, that is part of the brainstem. It's a very central part of the brain. And if there is no pupil reflex anymore, then the person can be considered brain dead. Okay, so this means the doctor shines a light into the person's eye, and if the person's pupil does not respond anymore, then the brainstem the midbrain is dead, and then the person is considered dead because the central part of the brain is responsible for life-maintaining functions. Okay, just because a person is not able to talk anymore or see anymore does not mean the person is dead. It could be just a problem with the cerebral cortex. Okay, but we have to test whether the central part of the brain is still alive, whether the life maintaining functions are still working, and that is done by assessing the pupil reflex. Okay, so optic nerves. What you have over here is you have two eyes and you have two brain hemispheres. And it is like this, that the information from the left eye has to go to both brain hemispheres. So the information from the left eye is split up to the left and the right hemisphere, and the information from the right eye is also split up and goes to the left and the right hemisphere. Okay? And the place where these nerve fibers cross over is called the optic chiasma. So it is not like this, that all of the nerve cells from one eye go to the other end of the brain, but only part of them. Yeah? So that is, you can see this quite well in the drawing here from the top. Okay, the information from the right eye goes both to the right and the left visual cortex. The visual cortex is part of the cerebral cortex, which is important for vision. And that's already it with the eye. Okay, my advice is the following. Very briefly, differences between rod and cone cells I mentioned, and one other difference between rod and cone cells, yeah, is the ability to sense color, light sensitivity, and the third thing is this one over here, is that multiple rod cells are combined together to one bipolar neuron. Just as a quick summary of the differences. Okay. While cone cells have separate have separate lines to the brain. Just to clarify, we've got red, green and blue sensitive cone cells. What about other colors? Yellow, for example. Well, all of this color mixing occurs in the brain. That's important, okay? So, page 152 is the next one. Hearing in humans, okay? Over here, what I'm going to do again is I'm going to explain all of the functions of the middle ear. I'm just going to explain this using the diagram down here, and I hope that I'm able to cover all those points here as well. You see a cross-section in the drawing structure of the human ear, what you have is you have ear vibrations, and the ear vibrations are picked up. They go to the outer ear, that's the auditory canal, until it strikes the so-called eardrum, okay? And the eardrum is also known as the tympanic membrane, okay? And the eardrum starts to vibrate. And then what happens is the following. This vibration is now passed on in the middle ear to the so-called, to the auditory ossicles. Ossicles are the small bones. There are three small bones in every ear. They're called ossicles. They're called malleus, incus, and stapes. Hammer, anvil, and stirrup. Hammer, anvil, and stirrup. That's the English translation. And the vibration in the eardrum first makes the malleus, the hammer, vibrate. This vibration is passed on to the incus. And then this one is passed on to the stapes. And so the one bone makes the other bone vibrate, so to say. And the question is why is this necessary? This is necessary because the vibration is it kind of amplifies the sound. Okay, it makes the sound louder. It's not strictly amplifying, but it reduces the amplitude but increases the force of the vibration. It's side information. The book says it amplifies. Okay, it makes it 20 times stronger. Okay, and then the stapes is now connected to the so-called oval window in the inner ear. And the oval window is part of the cochlea, and the cochlea contains now the receptors for picking up the sound. So the vibration is passed on over the oval window to the cochlea, making the liquid in the cochlea vibrate. So the vibration is passed on all the way into the cochlea, and in the cochlea you have so-called hair cells. Hair cells, and these hair cells, they now start to vibrate as well. And these hair cells contain receptors that pick up, which are basically they're now vibrating, and they make a nerve signal, which is then picked on over the auditory nerve and goes to the brain. Okay, so that is basically how sound is transmitted, and therefore I have now also explained the functions of the middle ear, of the ear in general, of the top box. Okay, so there are a couple of other things that are important. What is the so-called the eustachian tube? And it says here there is at the very bottom of the drawing, it says to throat. And this is a tube, the eustachian tube, which goes to the throat to make sure that there is the same air pressure on both sides of the eardrum. Okay, if this is not, then for example, you go on an airplane and there's a different air pressure, then you kind of feel it in your ears. Okay, but there has to be the same air pressure on both sides of the eardrum to allow the eardrum to vibrate freely. That is the one thing. And the next thing at the top here are the semicircular canals, and they are important for balance. Okay, and that's so the ear is important for hearing and for balance. Okay, and there are these three fluid-filled semicircular canals, and they also contain a liquid. And when you're now moving your head, then this liquid wants to stay put, but the head around is moving around the liquid, basically, okay? Because the liquid is kind of heavy, and if you're moving your head, then what happens is that the liquid tries to stay where it is, but you're kind of moving the head around the liquid, okay? And this causes the liquid to push against the receptors which are found in the semicircular canals, and this way you know in which direction you're moving your head. Yeah. And if you're turning yourself, if you're spinning around, then you're making this liquid spin inside the semicircular canals. And then if you stop spinning and turning, then the liquid continues to spin and you feel dizzy. Okay, so that is that's basically the thing over here with the semicircular canals. Is that you, and if you're kind of spinning around, then you're kind of confusing the system here. So that is basically the function of, it's important for balance, okay? So, what I have over here is also in the function of the cochlea, that is the next box over here, which I already mentioned a little bit. It says there are hair cells inside the cochlea, which basically start to vibrate and pick up the sound. But there, you have to understand is that different hair cells are specialized for different frequencies. Okay, so there are those hair cells that pick up the high sounds, and there are other hair cells that pick up the low sounds. Okay, and it's a little bit, the hair cells are a little bit like the strings in a piano. Yeah, different hair cells for different frequencies. So next one, cochlear implants. excuse me, on the left side. So that is a technical solution if there is a problem with the ear. Okay. And what you do is the following: if there is, for whatever reason, if the is a problem with the auditory ossicles, for example, why not stimulate the cochlea, the nerve cells, directly? Okay, so if there is, for whatever reason, if the signal, the sound cannot be transmitted to the cochlea, why is it? Is there not a possibility to directly stimulate the cochlea? And what you have is you have on the outside you have a microphone. Okay, and a little speech recording device, okay, not recording, a speech processor which filters out the sound. And then this one sends a signal to the inside of your ear, and inside the ear there is a receiver and in the cochlea, and this receiver picks up the signal from the microphone and from the transmitter and then stimulates the hear cells or of the cochlea, and then you can hear something even if there is some problem with the middle ear if the vibration is not passed on. Also, for example, it says here in the book, if there is a problem with the cochlear hair cells, maybe the hair cells are damaged, but then you're able to still directly stimulate the receptors, and you do that by using electricity. Okay. So the different sounds can be stimulated or can be created then by electricity. Okay, and you see that there is this little thing wrapped around in the cochlear. It says here electrode array, and these electrodes, they stimulate the nerve cells. Okay, so that is basically, that was the eye and the ear in a quick run through. Okay, and that's it. Wish you a nice day.